Blog Talk Radio.
Well, this is Blog Talk Radio, and this is Saturday, the 10th day of September 2022.
That we're in a universe where we are the product of genetic manipulation by a variety of other advanced extraterrestrial intelligences going back at least 2 million years. And we have ended up in a civilization in the last several thousand years in which all humans were denied any of the truth about the fact that the universe is teeming with intelligent life and that it has been involved in our planetary system, our solar system, and beyond in the 3 trillion estimated galaxies. And that, as incredibly incomprehensible as it seems, that in the middle of the 21st century, that we still have been kept in like a straitjacket of policies of denials and lies in order, one, to keep power brokers in place and in control. But there also have apparently been concerns, compassionate concerns, about humanity learning the whole truth or truths, of which tonight I have just touched a few scratches in the top of the iceberg.
Well, that's Linda Mouton Howell. She's an award-winning journalist, Emmy award-winning, if you will, for a lot of the work that she's been doing for the last 40 years, long time, to be constantly in the mode of a researcher for 40 years. I'm suggesting that people who want to get more information on her, all they have to do is Google her, Linda Mouton Howell, H-O-W-E, and you'll see a lot of stuff on it. If you go to YouTube, a lot of information on YouTube. We have Jillian with us today. Jillian, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, hello, Russell.
It's always a pleasure. Now,
thank you.
Did you know Linda? I know you know a lot of them.
No.
But you.
I don't know. I keep telling you, Russell, I'm living in the wilds of Montana. I don't go anywhere much, and I really don't know any of these people. So I'm sorry about that. I often know of their work, but I don't actually know them. So no, I don't know that young lady who was just speaking, and I don't know about her work either.
Oh, okay. Well, she really concentrated in 1980, which is like, 42 years ago, on the cattle mutilation. She put, I can't remember the not only the book she had, but she had a documentary about Strange Harvest, I think the title of that was. It was very popular.
Oh, yeah, Strange Harvest. I remember that, Strange Harvest.
All right, we'll talk about that for the people who don't know what that is. Strange Harvest, that was the mutilation of animals, cattle. Go ahead.
Yeah. It was mostly cattle mutilation, and a lot of it, some was in Texas, but most of it was in Colorado, if I remember correctly. And there would be perfectly round sections taken out of the cheek area of cattle, other different parts at various times, but that was a predominant place where there was always a beast. And the cattle were otherwise lying there, just dead, just with this one section taken out. And the general consensus at the time was twofold, that the majority of it was done at that time. If you remember, 1980 was the year we voted in Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan was taking a stand on demanding from the secret cabals in the government, essentially a CIA group of people who were holding on to a great deal of secret knowledge about extraterrestrials. And Ronald Reagan was one of the presidents who, like John Kennedy, was demanding information on this. And he made his famous speech where he suggested that there could be, you know, we should unite as a human race because there could be a threat coming to us from space. And so at the time, the consensus of opinion with the cattle mutilations among the people that I did talk to was that most of it was being done by our own government with the idea of stirring up this concept that we were under attack from, or could be under attack from, extraterrestrials, and that it was the extraterrestrials who were doing this to find ways to defeat us. That was a big story at the time among the people. That's what they were talking about. You know, I would go to global science conferences and these things. That was the general opinion. However, some also agreed that there was some extraterrestrial intervention, and that they were looking at ways of basically understanding the difference between humans and animal species on the planet, and learning more and more about their DNA, and also more and more about ways in which in future the human race could be controlled. And, you know, the greatest way to control any species is by controlling their food supply. Control their food supply, control their water supply, you control them. So the argument that extraterrestrials were taking these samples to find out more about humans and how we lived and what our food was, being well aware that we raise these cattle as a place of food supply. Maybe, for all I know, the extraterrestrials were thinking about raising us as a source of a food supply. That's always possible when you don't know who you're dealing with. But the main consensus was that it was our own government doing it.
Why do you think they were doing it? To frighten people or put in another...
To create a sense of fear, so that Ronald Reagan's speech about the idea of an extraterrestrial enemy coming to attack us was made more plausible. It was, you know, look, see, they're testing out their weapons and their abilities, and they're finding out what will damage flesh on this. Just turning it into an extraterrestrial fear-generating exercise. And, you know, if you notice, you don't hear much of it. You haven't heard much of it for 20 years now. Very seldom do you hear about these cattle mutilations. It was just in that short period of time, I would say, you know, maybe from the early 80s through to about 86 or 88, those few, less than a decade, and then it just faded away. And after that, we hardly heard any more about it.
In recent days, I haven't heard much about it either in recent days. But yes, that period of 80 to about 85, 86, as you said here, was a lot of information, talk and guess.
Yeah.
Okay, that's another deal that's happening too in recent years, or days, if you will. Louis Alexandro, he is with the Secret Department of the Pentagon, and he had this to say the other day.
When you get that Navy pilot saying what he said, do you think that that was, you know, a UFO, to obviously, I don't have any other word to use, or that, or something else?
Sure, that's a great question. Keeping in mind, it's not just the pilot's testimony on an observation. Sure, when someone comes to you who's in charge of a multi-million dollar weapon platform, who maintains a top secret security clearance, who is paid and trusted by this country to go fight wars, and to fly over cities with live munitions. And by the way, they're trained observers with millions of dollars invested in their training.
Yep.
I would submit to you it's pretty compelling. But on top of that, it's not just the eyewitness testimony. It is actual electro-optical data and radar returns. It's also people like radar operators and air traffic controllers. So I think the discussion should be maybe a little bit broader than that. I think people are focusing just on two videos coming from a set of F-18s, when really it's a lot more than that.
Now he was not only a secret agent with the Pentagon for many years, but he was higher up. So he said, "I don't know what they are. Let's talk about that. I don't know what's going on."
What I'd like to do, in view of that comment that Alexandra was making, and the lady before, Miss Howe, was saying about all, you know, these millions of years and trillions of galaxies and so on. I am not doubting anything that any of these people are saying. I'm sure they've done their research and it's true. But I think that for real understanding, we need to get some basic ground rules here. The
okay.
vast majority of UFOs seen in the skies of Earth are coming out of this planet. That's number one. And I would say that that is at least 80% of all sightings of UFOs in the last 500 years have generated from Earth. They are coming out of underground bases, the most of them now, for hundreds, even more than 2,000 or 3,000, 4,000 years now, they have come out of Lake Titicaca in Peru. That's one source that I definitely know they come from. They come out from the Dulce bases. They come out from a mountain in Oregon. They possibly come out of Mount Shasta. I've heard people talk about that, but I haven't seen them from there. They definitely, the majority of them, are coming from under the Antarctic, where they are being built and developed by Germans, collaboration with reptilians, and our Army Air Force group, or our Army, right? American Army. So that is where the majority of UFOs come from. We have also orbiting our planet for the last 5,000 years that I know about, right, for sure, right, we have at least two and possibly three huge ships that belong to the Anunnaki that have been in orbit around our planet ever since the majority of the Anunnaki left 4,500 years ago. So I know that those are up there, and they are big, big ships out of which small landing craft do occasionally come to the planet and therefore would be seen passing through our skies. That's not a very often event, but it does happen, right? In addition to that, we have the Pleiadians, who have been regular visitors to this planet for a long time and who are now working under the Antarctic in collaboration with a German group, also involved in the development of spaceships, right? So these are the majority that involve with our planet. Within the solar system, we have had reptilian ships battling within our system, the Sol system, between our sun and the outer planets, right, into the next galaxy, which begins with Pluto. The next system begins with Pluto, right? So that's the next octave up, if you like. In our galaxy, we have had reptilians for, again, several thousand years, trying to get more and more onto this planet, battling with the ships from those orbiting Anunnaki planets, which are basically sentinels trying to protect this planet from invasion by other extraterrestrials. And then we have some other visitors who basically just fly by. Very, very occasionally, they will land what we could think of as an exploratory group or a scouting group, if you like, on the planet. Some of those George would talk about. There was a group known to be in Spain at one time, and there is another group of extraterrestrials that were known to be down in South America in the Amazonian jungle area, and a group known to be in Brazil. That these are small scouting groups of not more than maybe 10 or 20 extraterrestrials off some ship that is up there. This is the vast majority of what we see. We are not constantly being invaded by dozens and dozens of different extraterrestrials, because they have to have a reason to come here. Now, it is true that we have several hundred thousand and maybe millions actually on Earth as extraterrestrials from other planetary systems who have chosen to incarnate as human beings their souls incarnating as human beings on the planet today. And I would estimate that that could be as high as a third of the people on the planet. In other words, up to 3 billion people are maybe originally from other planetary systems. But are they all coming to our planet in spaceships? The answer to that is no. And there's a really good reason for it being no. First of all, we're the tail end of the system. There's lots more interesting things farther up the Milky Way, and that's only in one galaxy. And there's more and more interesting things when you go out into other galaxies. You know, you go and look at the spiral, what's it, of Andromeda. That's an interesting place to go. You go to, Tau Ceti and these locations. So there are other interesting places to go. And many of those places do have space travelers. But the only reason that they started coming here, because remember, Earth was shut off from its, soon after its beginning, early in Earth's life, millions and millions of years ago, there was a massive cosmic accident when a traveling planet and Earth collided. And we ended up with a big chunk out of Earth, a moon, and an asteroid belt. And for thousands, millions of years, nobody could get through that asteroid belt. Nobody could work out a simple way to get through it. So the idea that extraterrestrials have been coming here, well, they may have been coming here before that cosmic accident, which was soon after the creation of Earth, or they may have been coming in the last few million years, but have they been coming for billions of years or trillions of years, as was being suggested? No, they have not, because they couldn't get to us. We were hidden off. So why are they coming now? Why is this, are we hearing all about all these different extraterrestrials that are visiting Earth now? Well, two real reasons for this. One, we started shooting rockets up into space again. Now, when the Anunnaki were here, they used to do that because they were sending gold off to Mars. So they would send rockets to the moon, and from moon they'd launch it to their refueling station on Mars. That's a long time ago. And after that, things were quiet for a long time on this planet. And now suddenly, thousands of years later, we're starting launching rockets to the moon with our moonshots and our space rockets. Now, that kind of catches somebody's attention. And other extraterrestrials started paying attention. Hey, if they're coming out into space, we want to know more about them. And that's why they are sending different species, are doing more flybys, passing us by and taking readings and measurements and all the things they do, and sending scouting parties down to the surface with multiple landings at various places on the planet. That's all gone on since the 1960s, since we started our moon things, and possibly a little before that when, you know, we were testing rockets and so on. And of course, the real biggie was when we blew up the atomic bomb. That got a lot of attention in the cosmos. And indeed, when we developed the hydrogen bomb, multiple extraterrestrial races got together and essentially put us into an electronic quarantine to prevent us actually blasting off hydrogen bombs and damaging anything in the rest of the universe. But still, you are still looking at a limited number of species involving with this planet. It's not hundreds of species. It's maybe a dozen or less who have any ongoing interest in this planet. The second reason that they are coming is because here on Earth, an almost magical thing has happened in the last, I want to say, less than 1,000 years. Humanity's intellect, creativity, and ingenuity has expanded in such a phenomenal way. And not only have humanity expanded their ingenuity, they have also with it expanded their spiritual awareness. So that, for instance, now people are researching things like quantum physics in relation to frequency healing, getting to be a real understanding of the reality of spirituality. And such an advancement, although it's not including everybody, of course, it is including a high percentage of Earth humans, probably a quarter of Earth humans, have moved into this mindset of connecting the reality of spirituality and basically an understanding that there is a true spirituality in what they consider to be their reality. And so this has never happened ever before that anybody's really noticed. They've either, those civilizations who have advanced to those very high levels, have either sacrificed technology in order to advance spiritually, or they have thrown out spirituality in order to move forward and rely on technology. This ideal combination of the two is a rare thing, and it's going on planet Earth right now. Thousands of people are understanding that their reality has a spiritual basis to it, and that they better understand both if they wish to move forward. Now, it's this very same condition of the advancement of humanity which has also caused the holdback in information in large degree, the extraterrestrials, from the human population. Because it is true to say that, you know, the inner workings of the evil cabals that we all know about, you know, all the bad people who want to control everything, they withhold information. The CIA has been withholding it for a long time, and the government's been withholding it for forever, right? No government has ever let it go loose on the planet. So that is definitely about their desire to have control and to make sure that it's the same thing as the church tells you, you can only go to heaven and meet God if you do what they tell you. And they want to keep themselves between you and your creator so they can control you and tell you, you know, all the bad things they tell you. And the government doesn't tell you about the truth of the universe and the extraterrestrial in as far as they know it, and that's not too much, but in as far as they know it and understand it, they withhold that information from the population to keep control. But there is another reason, and a really better reason, why that knowledge has been withheld, why governments, if you like, have been prompted to withhold it, and that is that humans are only just growing up. We are a young race, humans on this planet. We have only been sentient beings in the sense of Homo sapiens, with the intelligence quotient that we have today. We have only been those beings for around 40,000 years, which is a drop in the bucket in terms of the cosmos. And we have only had self-rule as humans on this planet for 6,000 years. So in the last 6,000 years, we've been on a massive learning curve. It is true. But still, if you count a year as a grade, a thousand years as a grade, we're only in grade 6 now, right? In other words, we as a species are still coming into understanding where specific information will not be too much for us to handle. Well, right now, we've arrived at that point where we can handle it. So yes, it's time the government told the truth. And that is what is happening now. Truth is coming out in this generation because this is the generation at the end of a historic cycle for humans where all these truths will come to the surface. We will get to know them. And talking about why the government hid it will be a pointless exercise simply because we will know it. And we are getting to know it every day now.
Yeah, but that's among only the few, right? When I look at the masses of the people here, just in America, say, let's call it 350 million people, I think only a handful of people understand any of what you just said. I mean, really conceptually, when they get up in the morning and say, oh, okay, this planet and the universe, there are other species in the universe. There are millions and millions and millions of people who don't even believe that there are any other entities in the vastness of the universe except the people here on Earth. Would you believe that? Can
yes,
you see that?
They are still. Yes, and I understand that perfectly. And I think what I said was that there is a percentage of humans that have evolved to that level of understanding where they can deal with all this. Some people are just not ready to deal with it. You know, I nursed for some years, and I became very, because I'm big on telling the truth about everything, you know, no matter what, you tell the truth, always better to tell the truth. But I learned when I was nursing that some patients want the doctor to tell them the truth. They want the doctor to say when it's appropriate, we're sorry, this is, you know, what's going on with you, and there's nothing more we can do for you, and you probably have only 3 months, 6 months, a year to live. Some patients want that, but a great many more don't want to know until the week before they're dying that they're dying, because they feel that they can no longer live their lives, or they become afraid, or they become upset. They just don't want to know. And sometimes when they are told, they will say, I wish you'd never told me that. They can't, because they can't get past it. So if there are people, there's absolutely, I do not believe that almost anywhere on the planet today, somewhere or another, people do not have access to a computer, the YouTube, the Facebook things, the, you know, social media things, or a newspaper, or somebody passing information to them. In other words, if they want the information, it's available to them. They can get it, right? They can ask questions. And if they don't ask the question, they really don't want to know. I do not believe that there's anybody anywhere on the planet who at some time in their life hasn't either heard or participated in the question, are we alone in the universe? And if they are of that bent of mind which chooses to say, I believe there's only the human race, and there are many who believe that for religious reasons, if for no other, right? That there is only this human race on Earth, and there is no such thing as extraterrestrials. If that's what they choose to believe, that is their choice. Because the one thing I do know for sure in this universe about the way things operate and the rules of the game, the fundamental rule of the game is that we never have the right to make other people's choices. We don't have the right to tell them what to think. We can offer information, but if they don't want it, that's their choice. We should not be worrying ourselves about whether they believe it or not. That's their choice. What we should be doing is offering it, and that's where the government is wrong. They need to open it up and put this information out there. And the fact that maybe half the people in the world won't accept it, that's irrelevant, because that's their choice. They don't want to believe it. Fine. It's like I've been telling people for years, please, please, please store food, long-term dry goods food storage, because there are famines coming to this planet. And now even governments cautioning people, in England, the government was telling them, put in food supplies for this winter because there are going to be shortages. You don't need a clairvoyant anymore to tell you what's happening in the world. It's out there and everybody knows it. But if people choose to do nothing about it, that's their choice.
Okay, well, a lot of people choose not to do anything about it. A lot of people decided for whatever reason, that they don't want to hear about any aliens or extraterrestrials.
Right.
They don't want to be bothered.
Yeah.
They don't want to believe it. They don't want to put that in their construct, that there's a possibility of other aliens walking around on this planet or living on this planet or visiting this planet. They don't even really want to hear that. So when the Pentagon puts it out there, it's shocking for some people. Let me do this. Pentagon.
So what you're telling me is that UFOs, unidentified flying objects, are real. Bill, I think we're beyond that already. The government has already stated for the record that they're real. I'm not telling you that. The United States government is telling you that. Luis Elizondo spent 20 years running military intelligence operations worldwide in Afghanistan, the Middle East, and Guantanamo. He hadn't given UFOs a second thought until 2008. That's when he was asked to join something at the Pentagon called the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, or ATIP.
The mission of ATIP was quite simple. It was to collect and analyze information involving anomalous aerial vehicles, what I guess in the vernacular you call them UFOs. We call them UAPs.
Okay, great. Wonderful. Now, you go back, and he's saying he didn't know anything up until 2008, but your history is more ubiquitous than that. It's all over the place in terms of your knowledge of UFOs and aliens and people on this planet. I mean, don't you – you're not the average. Are we on the same page?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
I think I'm pretty normal, but okay.
But you're not the average in terms of understanding this issue. Okay?
No.
Let me do this on the Pentagon.
Imagine a technology that can do 600 to 700 G-forces, that can fly at 13,000 miles an hour, that it can evade radar, and that can fly through air and water and possibly space, and, oh, by the way, has no obvious signs of propulsion, no wings, no control surfaces, and yet still can defy the natural effects of Earth's gravity. That's precisely what we're seeing.
Elizondo tells us ATIP was a loose-knit mix of scientists, electro-optical engineers, avionics, and intelligence experts, often working part-time. They combed through data and records and analyzed videos like this. A Navy aircrew struggles to lock onto a fast-moving object off the U.S. Atlantic coast in 2015. Recently released images may not convince UFO skeptics, but the Pentagon admits it doesn't know what in the world this is, or this, or this.
So what do you say to the skeptic? It's refracted light, weather balloons, a rocket being launched, Venus.
In some cases, there are simple explanations for what people are witnessing, but there are some that are not. We're not just simply jumping to a conclusion that's saying, oh, that's a UAP out there. We're going through our due diligence. Is it some sort of new type of cruise missile technology that China has developed? Is it some sort of high-altitude balloon that's conducting reconnaissance? Ultimately, when you have exhausted all those what-ifs and you're still left with the fact that this is in our airspace and it's real, that's when it becomes compelling and that's when it becomes problematic.
Now, that's for most people, when they hear that, it's an awakening. You go, oh, wow, what's going on? They don't know anything about Roswell or 1942 over there, that all those for 5 hours that the people who lived in Seattle, Washington, I believe it was Seattle, or Los Angeles, saw thousands or hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of those UFOs. But you were aware of that, right? And then over the Capitol in 1952.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But people just don't know that history. No one has studied that.
But the thing is that when you tell the people things like that, are they going to believe it? Now that things are coming out, you know, from the government or from the Pentagon or from these serious places, then you will have an increasing number of people who will believe it. I could tell you stories of my experiences that I know about. But I'll just tell you a couple of little things. And I have not the remotest possibility that I would expect anybody to believe me, because I know they won't, right? But when I came to this planet 14,500 years ago on a big ship, right, the journeying time, while we were journeying, I was acting on learning how to be a navigation officer, how to do ship's navigation. And the principles of how they navigate the great big ships that travel beyond the speed of light, right? And I even know how they do that, right? Really very simple processes. It requires mathematics that are way beyond my understanding. I never learned how to do that. But I understand the principle of how they do it and how they travel beyond speed of light. And I read recently in a science report some little thing that struck me, and I thought, yes, this, whatever that article was I was reading, I thought, these people are talking about the same principle that lets ships move beyond the speed of light, but they don't realize that's what they're talking about yet, but they will. You don't, when you travel beyond the speed of light, you actually close space up. It's as if you're standing still. You can go three light years, and you'd think you'd only move 10 feet. It's a whole different concept when you get out into deep space, beyond the solar system and into real space, where you can travel beyond the speed of light. Then it's a whole different business of movement. So I know about these things. I understand these things, and I understand the principles of how they work. When I came to this planet, I was only young. I was like, in my own being as an Anuna, I was 17 years old. I had my 17th birthday as we entered the solar system. We came past Saturn, was my 17th in Anunnaki years, which is 17 times 3,600, right? But come out of high school here, I just come out of training as a medical technician when I'd got on the ship. And as we came into the solar system, that's when I'm saying I was a 17-year-old. Now, I've been incarnating I was 14,000 years on the planet. No, 10,000 years on the planet before I was killed. And then I've been, for the last 4,500 years, incarnating as an Earth human. And these time frames, if you put them all together, I'm actually, when I die and go home, which is back to my Anunnaki origins, I'll only be 3 years older or 4 years older than I was when I came here 14,500 years ago. So everything changes when you get into deep space. And there's nobody going to believe these things that I'm telling you now. Well, how can she know this? No, it's ridiculous to say somebody as relatively uneducated as I am actually understands these things. I understand about quantum entanglement, and I've never heard a lecture on quantum physics in my life. I understand the springs and loops theory, although I've never heard those words in my life. But in my mind, I understand them because they're in my memory banks. I just know these things, like they're instinctive knowledge, if you like. But do I expect anybody to believe me? No, of course not. Why would they? They know me. People know me. They know the highest graduation I ever got was to be a registered nurse. I'm basically uneducated on this planet. So why would they give credence to anything I say? Well, that's the same thing as happens when they talk about UFOs. And they talk about different cultures and alien species coming to the planet and all the things that we talk about. Why would they believe it? It's way outside their bounds of experience. But when it starts to come out from the government, from the Pentagon, when they present documentation, when they show photos of our space force that's now flying in space with the United States flag, when they show photos of these things, then people will start to believe it. And however skeptical they are ultimately they will come to accept it. But it's a hard thing to ask anybody to accept anything that's way outside the scope of their life's experience. It's almost an oxymoron to ask our tiny little human brains to comprehend the cosmos and everything that's in it. We're only just in this generation getting a few people ready to do that, ready to take that step forward. According to spirit, or these guys, you know, I call them all spirit, but according to them, there were as many as 40% of Earth humans who are now ready for understanding these experiences, understanding these things, having these things interact in their lives, ready to move forward into that experience. And that is about the number who actually currently believe in extraterrestrials and UFOs and all the other things. About half the people believe and slightly more than half don't. And that's right, that's where we should be.
Okay. I tell you, let me do this. Even Carlson, a very conservative gentleman, if you will, on Fox News, he was doing something the other day talking about the Pentagon and this disclosures and all that, and he was saying, would you believe that entities in the vastness of the universe visiting the planet?
They've been hiding the truth about UFOs. That's true. We did a whole documentary on it for our Tucker Carlson original series. We took a look at what our leaders have been hiding. It's just out. Here's part of it. When the government isn't lying about what they're seeing, they're hiding what they know.
You can see they would black out nearly everything on all of the pages. They didn't want to talk about it.
Sunshine laws give Americans the right to appeal the blacked out portions within government documents.
When I asked the NSA to do that, they mysteriously lost each and every one of the hundreds of pages that they had collected. The reality of the NSA losing all of that on UFOs is nil. That's the length that they will go to try and cover this up.
The government knows more than it's letting on. But I'm not convinced even the government have all the answers here.
Even inside the U.S. government, secrecy is the rule. After pilot Chad Underwood spotted the famous flying Tic Tac, he learned that a Navy missile cruiser nearby had been tracking it for weeks.
So he went on and talked about, yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Address that for us.
First of all, I like him. I like that reporter. I think he does a good job reporting, and I like to listen to him and his opinions on things. But can I just do an imaginary story? Right?
Okay.
I'm not saying this is any truth in it. I'm going to just make up an imaginary story,
Please.
Part of the whole truth and nothing but the truth has to incorporate what is going on under Antarctica. Now, how do you think the vast majority of the American public will take it when not only are they told about extraterrestrials and UFOs and given the evidence that, you know, the government's known about them all along for a very long time, right? Always known about them. How do you think they will feel when they find out that a lot of the UFOs are currently being built on planet Earth under Antarctica, run as factories run by slave labor, owned and operated by Germans from Hitler's Nazi regime, who escaped to Antarctica after World War II in collaboration with the reptilians and parts of our government?
Wow.
Don't you think people would be pretty darn mad when they, their husbands and their sons and their family members gave their lives fighting Hitler in World War II, and there are still enough people like me alive today who remember that. It's not just history to us. We actually remember it. We live through it, right? And, you know, our kids would know all about it. I know our parents are probably all dead by now, but certainly we would have told our kids about it. And that was a terrible, terrible war. And what Hitler did in the concentration camps particularly, not so much as a fighting war, but in the concentration camps and using slave labor in his industry throughout the war, and then transferring that slave labor to South America and Antarctica in the last 2 years before the war ended, and continuing building his industrial base in Antarctica, and that we are in cahoots with them and the reptilians. We have joined, part of our military has joined forces with them, and that our government approves this, that our military industrial complex is built on a deal with the remains of Nazis from Nazi Germany and reptilians, because this is a big, big piece of the truth. And when that comes out and is proven not to be what I'm saying, I'm making it up as an imaginary story, but I know it's the truth now because I read Dr. Salah's reports and I saw all the written evidence, and I already knew the reptilians and the Germans were down there. I just got the detail of it from Dr. Salah's books and the documentary evidence. My inquiry into it started when, you know, all the heads of state, Obama and the Queen and all these people, the Pope, they all met and went down into Antarctica to have a look-see. All the Illuminati top went to have a look to see what was happening 4 or 5 years ago, whenever it was. That set my curiosity, and I really started digging into it because I knew the Germans had gone there, and I knew there were aliens down there under the ice, but I didn't realize the extent of it until I read Dr. Salah's books, which document it very well. So when that becomes known as part of this open disclosure, what do you think people will do then? Do you think they'll be happy about it? Do you think there are enough Nazi supporters still in America who will approve of this? Do you think all the Jewish communities who were so badly massacred through the Holocaust, do you think they will support a government who is working with Nazis and reptilians? It's going to be a very, very, very windy road for the government to walk down as they disclose this truth. They are never going to disclose the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, because it doesn't matter which government was in power when they made the disclosures, it would destroy them, I'm sure. Does that story make sense to you?
Of course it makes sense to me, because it's happening. Listen, here's what Dr. Salah... All
the resources and manpower of the U.S. military-industrial complex were hence made available for a significant expansion of the German space program, whereby it could become an interplanetary colonial power capable of deploying significant military resources outside of our solar system in support of their extraterrestrial allies. In addition to the Antarctica revelations of William Tompkins, we also have the testimony of Corey Good, who says he served in the U.S. Navy's secret space program, Solar Warden. His claims of serving in Solar Warden and having extensive contact with multiple groups of extraterrestrials were extensively examined in the first volume of this secret space program series. The connection of the pre-Adamites to different historical epochs in our solar system and the role of Antarctica as a refuge for escaping Martians and the inhabitants of a former super-Earth from the asteroid belt is laid out and scrutinized in Chapter 13. The connection between Antarctica and the fallen angels described in the Book of Enoch ensues and is analyzed in Chapter 14. It will be shown how this apocryphal book points to Antarctica as the location of their imprisonment. Most incredible is Good's claim that some of these pre-Adamites are still alive in stasis chambers and that their bloodline descendants want to not only awaken them, but also restore them to their previous positions of authority. If left undisturbed, this nexus of domination and slavery will spread like a virus over the rest of the planet with predictable results. It's up to all that cherish human freedom and creativity to rise up, end this vile practice, and expose the global elite that secretly enable it. Only full disclosure of Antarctica's suppressed history and its current events will ensure that all humanity benefits from the advanced technologies that have been secretly developed and deployed there. Disclosure will furthermore help prepare humanity for major geological events that lie ahead, as West Antarctica's ice shelves continue to melt due to increased volcanic activity. A global transformation awaits us if we have the courage to embrace the truth about what was and is occurring now in Antarctica.
Now, most of that information is in the book Antarctica's Hidden History by Dr. Michael Seller, and you've gone all through that. But as you indicated, that's going to be a revelation, a tremendous surprise, an awakening for the majority of people on the face of the earth, including the Jewish population. Yeah.
Yes, it is. It absolutely is, you know, when that truth comes out. But now let me tell you another little thing, right?
Okay.
About the same subject, but here's another bit of information that I was given quite recently when I was giving some thought to this matter of you know, the extraterrestrials, the reptilians, really. I was thinking about working with the Germans and the fact that there is a huge Pleiadian congregation in Antarctica under the ice. Why the Pleiadians are there, except, of course, that they were the ones who gave the original technology to the German Nazi Vril Society before World War II, teaching them how to build the rocket systems that they used to bomb Earth. So although most of the stuff, as I've said before, that comes out from the Pleiadian is apparently very spiritual, full of spiritual sweetness and light, we need to look at question, I think, their actual agenda with planet Earth, because they were the ones who gave the technology to Hitler in the first place to develop his V rockets that were so destructive. You know, they were the ones that destroyed London and a good part of England in World War II, and also the basis of his UFO technology, his rocketry. His rocket. And incidentally, by default, I knew of one of his chief rocket scientists called Walter Gerhardt, who was known to a friend of mine, and he was so upset by what was coming in this information that he actually stood against Hitler and was forced to work for him, but he was eventually put into one of the camps for helping Jewish families escape from Germany. He was not supporting Hitler at all, and was in fact one of the scientists that America brought over at the end of the war. So there were a number of these German scientists who were not on the evil program, but there were enough of them who were willing to go to Antarctica and continue the work, which they continue today. I'm sure some of them are still, you know, down there working, because the Pleiadians have the technology for reversing time, for moving time back. They can take your time back, whether it's a skill for lengthening the telomeres or an actual adjustment of time, I'm not sure. But I know that they have the skill for moving things in time. So it's very likely that many of those scientists still working for the Germans are the same German scientists that they were working in World War II under Antarctica. But here's the bit of information that was given to me recently. They said, well, don't worry about it too much, because just like you were reading out of Dr. Seller's books, there are a lot of cataclysmic earth changes still to, we've hardly scratched the surface of it yet. It's just nicely beginning. And one of the things that they told me was that there will, those volcanoes as a whole, I think there are 5 or 7 formerly active and now partially active volcanoes under Antarctica that are melting the ice shelf, which is what Dr. Suller is talking about in his book. Well, I was told that they will start to erupt massively and that those ice shelves will collapse on top of the reptilian and German bases, that they will be buried under tons and tons of ice. So I'm not too worried about them anymore. The one thing that we sometimes forget to take into consideration is the Almighty has a pretty powerful hand. And when things are going so badly wrong, creation steps in and does something about it. And I understand that the next time they're going to step in and do something about it is be active in burying most of those evil intent people under masses and masses of ice. So maybe we don't need to worry too much about the Germans and the reptilians. But sadly, of course, it will bury all the thousands of people who are now working as slave labor in their underground factories. People stolen from their lives and the people taken from the time of World War II down there. Several thousand of them, I understand.
But isn't there are a lot of cities all across the broad spectrum of the whole planet called Earth where hundreds of thousands, probably millions of people are still living, but people don't even believe that. Are we on the same page? When you talk about Delcy, you talk about New Mexico?
Yeah.
Would you say people are still there?
And the underground bases in Delcy. Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But would you believe that
Absolutely.
People don't... Okay. Would you believe that a majority of the people can't even imagine that people are living in those combs or underground bases all across the broad spectrum of the United States or the world? People don't believe
well,
it?
Well, yeah, I can understand that they don't believe it because they don't have the knowledge. You know, you asked me one time, a long time ago, a year or more ago, you asked me when we were having a conversation one day what I knew about the inner Earth people. You know, that bird, that Captain Bird had encountered when he flew over the pole. Now, I knew about Captain Bird. I knew what his story. I knew I definitely know that there's a hole at the pole because I've been shown it. I've been taken and out of body and shown where there was that hole. And I was actually writing to scientists that I knew of at one time, asking them, do you know anything about this hole? You know, do you know anything about this hole? So I knew those things. But I knew nothing about the people who live in the earth, and I still don't know anything about them, in the sense that it's not within my experience. I have never been there, so far as I know, and I have never met them, and I don't know anything about them. So they are outside the scope. Do I believe that they are there? Well, I neither believe nor don't believe. For me, it's an open question because I don't disbelieve the stories that these other people tell. They're telling stories the same as I tell stories. I know I only tell true stories, so I have to accept that they probably are only telling true stories. So I'm willing to say, yeah, this is probably true. But it's not a truth for me because I haven't experienced it. And I think that is the reality for most of us, that if it's outside our reality, it's not true for us. We might think, oh, yes, well, you know, maybe there's extraterrestrials, maybe there's UFOs, maybe there's other people in the universe. But until we have our Damascus moment, you know, it's not true for us.
Okay. How about the people who...
And that's a good thing.
Okay, not a problem. But there are people, 1%, 2% of the people on planet Earth, who have been abducted, and they are talking about their memories and experiences of those abductions.
Right. Uh-huh.
And other people who have never been abducted don't believe those people.
No.
Like,
nor would they, because it's not their experience.
Okay.
You know, that has to be, in one sense, it has to be a good thing. The biggest problem on the planet today, in my opinion, right, is that for the last 2,500 years, we have been brainwashed in the Western world by the Christian churches, not Christ and not Christ teachings, but the churches and the way they have presented them to us. And we have believed. You know, how many people walk around saying, I believe. And they have no idea what they believe because it's not part of their experience. And rather than do the research, arrive at the understanding and do the work on themselves, personal work, so that they raise their own frequency and through that can have direct contact with spirit or Christ or the Holy Ghost or whatever you want to call it, that spiritual connection that becomes a reality in life. And they don't want to be bothered to do that. So they have accepted the teachings of whatever church they've decided to follow, right? And just say, well, I believe because the church tells me to. Well, that's not really believing. It's just accepting what somebody else is telling you. And that has proved to be the downfall of humanity. That's the single biggest obstacle that we have to get over in order to advance as a species to a higher level of life and understanding. So it's a good thing when people say, I don't believe it because it's not in my experience. The problem is if they stop there and don't say beyond that, but I will ask the questions, I will start doing the research, I will start looking for information and look at it in a real way, look for empirical evidence that demonstrates the truth of these things, not just believing. So it's a good thing not to believe what other people tell you. I would never ask anybody to believe what I tell them.
Okay, but there have been people who have been abducted and the minds have been erased, and they don't even remember they have been
abducted. For me, the conscious memories that I had was in the middle of the night, I woke up, very conscious, walked over to my living room, saw something in the room, felt the white light, felt the paralysis, and then I fell asleep. Several hours later, I woke up and had these intense emotions associated with the experience that just I couldn't fathom. Like, why was I so scared? Why was I terrified? What was...
You had a bad dream.
That's what I thought. That's what I wanted to believe. Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted to believe for years. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what most people want to believe.
Now, Dr. Mack, of course, he was at the University of Pennsylvania, I believe, and he was a psychiatrist or head of psychiatry. But anyway, he came up with a lot of information and ridiculed, laughed at, made fun of the whole nine yards. I think he's gone now, but that was a big story. Then, of course, you had Whitney Strieber with Communion, which was a true story. And there's a motion picture Communion for the people who don't want to believe it or haven't seen the motion picture or want to catch up with some history. Watch the motion picture Communion. Or there, yep. Walton, who was abducted with five others in the woods in Pennsylvania somewhere. And that motion picture is called Fire in the Sky. That's another true motion picture. And, of course, we talked about Steven Spielberg and the television series, the 13-hour television series of Taken. Now, what do you think about Taken? You saw it. Give me your feedback.
I thought all those that you mentioned, I thought were very well done representations of true events. In Communion, for example, what they called the little blue doctors, those little they're almost like dwarves. They look like dwarves, right? Short, stubby little race of beings with the navy blue suits on. They actually, what they wear is like a navy blue overall thing. It's just like a button-up overall. They are responsible. They're primarily warehouse and transport people. And I have interacted with them many times in my life. So I can say, yes, I know what these beings are like, and it's absolutely correct. And that film Communion is an excellent representation of not only the interaction with his interactions and his family's interactions, but a representation of the actual experience and the way it goes. And the reason I say, and the same is true for those other movies that you mentioned, Fire in the Sky, Young Travis, you know, I knew him because he used to come to Global and talk about his experiences. And the other one, Taken is an excellent representation of the way humans deal with people who deal with extraterrestrials. I know I never mentioned to anybody that I knew that I interacted with extraterrestrials, although I did it my entire life. I never mentioned it until I was maybe 50 years of age. And it wasn't until people started talking about Zachariah Sitchin's books, and I said, well, yes, you know, I know those things. And then I started talking to them, just to people I knew. Those years, now I'm so old, I don't care if people think I'm crazy anymore, you know. They can think what they like, you know, what is my truth, and that's it. But I do think that those films are very instructive and well worth watching as a good introduction to what goes on, because what usually happens with abductions is that they take you, and you are, I have to say, you're not randomly chosen. Do not think you are random. You are one of those people in a genetic line that goes back over 6,000 years that keeps track of those histories and the evolving DNA in that lineage. And there are millions of people all over the planet, obviously tens of millions, that have now branched from that original, maybe 1 million, let's say. No, not even that many. Maybe 500-600 families been tracked constantly for the last 6,000 years. And so you are a descendant in that lineage if you are an abductee. And the first thing that they do is, it's like going to the hospital. You get medical tests done. And some of those tests are not particularly pleasant. The worst one, in my opinion, of course, is the rectal exam. Nobody likes that. And this is one of the things they do. So they blank your mind out. So you don't remember it. It works like anesthesia. You don't remember what was happening to you. Unfortunately, and this is an admission on my part, unfortunately, in recent history, I want to say the last 1,000 years or 500 years, definitely, they have used, the people who are ordering these tests have used the services of a group of extraterrestrial beings who work with them and who come from a different system, the Reticulan system, and they use them as their, let's say, laboratory technicians. And those beings who do that, I have never personally supported it, because they do not have an emotional base themselves. And so it's beyond their comprehension that people would be afraid of these tests or these experiences. And so they, in my opinion, do not treat the patients as gently and as kindly as they should. And it's no wonder the poor people being tested get frightened and scared and have an unhappy experience. However, it is helpful when the people come back from the experience, if at a later date they do go, and I'm not big on hypnosis, it's not something I recommend ever. However, in the case of abductees, I would think that it is generally helpful to them to do a hypnosis session with somebody whom they can trust and who does medical hypnosis professionally, to actually come to terms with what happened to them, because their abductions are never going to stop. They are going to be taken, on average, throughout their lives once every decade. About every 10 years, those people who are in those bloodlines will be taken roughly every 10 years, 10 to 15 years. They will be abducted and tested throughout their lives. And you kind of get used to it after a while. But if you really don't want to mind it, it's better to understand what's happening to you. And so I suggest that anybody who thinks they've been abducted, go and do hypnosis and find out and come to terms with it and realize that in a way, you're kind of special people because you are considered baseline for measuring the development of humanity. That's what's being done with these abductees. Now, that's not the same thing as those who get abducted by the ones under Dulcy, for example, the Greys, who are doing breeding experiments with humans. That's a whole different, that's not communion story, that's not Taken story, and that's not Bill Trapper's story. That is a completely different story. And they just randomly take people, test them to see their fertility level, and then they take them and they take their ova, they take their fetuses, they take their sperm. This is bad, bad news, and it's by bad or not well-intentioned extraterrestrials. That's a whole different story.
Yeah, but,
so you
but,
do
but,
need to know which kind of abductee you are.
Okay.
And that's another reason to do the hypnosis.
Okay, but while we are here, how is it possible to be in beds asleep, right, as in the, many of those stories, and all of a sudden they pull you through a wall or the ceiling or window? How can they do that?
Yeah.
How can they?
Because they, first of all, they're not always, the abductees for testing, they are physically taking. So yes, they do take you through a solid wall, right? And the doing of it is much like Beam Me Up, Scotty. They have the ability to disassemble your molecules and reassemble them on when they get where they're going. I'll tell you a funny story about that if you like. And by the way, the ones who come and do that are usually wearing, they look like normal human-sized people, and they wear silver suits, silver-colored, like silver tracksuits. They look as if they're dressed in, and they usually have a pretty dominant energy field around them or behind them, you know. But anyway, I was staying with some friends in New York one time, and they had turned their attic level to be servants' quarters. They turned it into a beautiful guest suite, you know, with a nice bathroom and a big bedroom with a sitting area. And at the end of the bedroom, facing the foot of the bed, but a good 20 feet away, there was this huge arched window, one of those great big transept windows with panels in it, you know, like a fan-shaped window. Anyway, I'm sitting reading in bed, and I had a shawl around my shoulders. It was a bit chilly, and I'm reading my book, and I look up, and there are these two standing inside the window in the, you know, bottom of the room. And I said, oh, hello. And they started talking to me, and we had a little conversation about, not about anything in particular, you know, just how are you, what have you been doing kind of thing. And then they said, well, we've come to collect you, Gillian, because we have to take you tonight. And I said, oh, you want me to just lie down and go to sleep so they could pull me out of body? They said, no, no, we are taking all of you. We're taking you physical. So I said, well, okay, that's fine. That's okay, right? So they came up, one of them came up, and they have like a, it looks like a wand, you know, the magician's wand with a little thing on the end and the top on it. And they just touch you with that. And you kind of start to lose awareness. Most people, it renders them immediately totally unconscious, right? But, you know, I'm kind of used to it. It just stabilized me. The next thing, I rise up off the bed, and I'm floating across the bedroom, and my feet are stuck, you know, my toes are stuck up towards the ceiling, and I'm stiff, like a magician's done a hypnosis thing on me. I'm stiff as a board, and I'm floating across the room, and I feel the soles of my feet touch the glass in this icy cold window. And I said to myself, oh, my God, they're taking me through the window, through the glass. And they hit me with the wand again, and that was it. That was the last I knew. And they took me right through the window. Okay. So, yeah, I understand that that can be a scary experience, because for a moment there, it freaked me out when I felt my feet actually touch the window in those moments before I was unconscious. So I can understand people getting scared with this. It can be quite scary, even when you're used to it.
All right. Well, there's a motion picture called The Fourth Kind. They did it in Nome, Alaska, and they talked about the Sumerian civilization and all that. But if you haven't seen that, you may want to watch that. And for those individuals who think they may have been abducted, you may not want to watch it. It was for some people, it was frightening. The Fourth Kind. You need to watch it if you're doing your homework.
You know,
The Fourth Kind.
Well, is it a, like a big regular movie, or is it a YouTube thing?
No, it's a regular movie. It's big, you know.
It's a regular.
Yeah,
I can tell you something about that as well. Years and years ago, my friend who was a fellow clairvoyant, was living in Juneau. And we got an invitation from the guys to go to Nome, Alaska. And they said, girls, you need to come to Nome on the second week of October and rent a car and drive 50 kilometers due north of Nome, and we'll meet you there, and we'll take you down into a base, right? Well, we decided not to go, basically, because it's very expensive to get to Nome, Alaska. And it was October. It was the middle of winter. And it was like, no, we're not going to go up there and freeze to death. No way, forget it. But I do know that there is a base up there, because I've out of body being taken to it before. And you go down like a crevasse, and the ice is blue, brilliant, brilliant blue ice. And you go, the way into it is like a going down the slope into a crevasse, and then you turn right at the bottom and go into this underground base. But the interesting thing was, they invited us. We didn't go, right? Years later, I was listening to something on the news, and they were talking about events in Nome, Alaska. And they said that they'd had these strange events that people were reporting, including on their radios and televisions, these peculiar sounds. And the sounds are like, ee, 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 those kind of sounds. And they were getting them, and the radio people could not track them down, and they didn't know what they were. Well, on another occasion, when we were in Hawaii, we had two beings visited us, and they talked between themselves just like that. That's the language they used. And they had this broad, one of them had this broad belt with big, like, jewels set in the buckle at the front. It was big, big stones. And when they wanted to talk to us, whichever one wanted to talk to us, wore that belt. And that belt was like a translator. So when they were making these noises, it came out as English language. It was fascinating. And we actually recorded that. So somewhere I have one of those little tape recordings of the same sounds that they were getting in Alaska. So now you're telling me that there's something really scary going on up there. So I'll have to watch this movie. I'll have to find it and
you have
and
to
view
watch
it. And then I'll let you know what I think.
But you have to watch that movie, The Fourth Kind. Excellent, excellent, excellent movie in terms of what's going on in Nome, Alaska. Now, let me ask you this, since we're on abduction. You said the other day that if one were abducted, right? If you were abducted, right? You say be very cautious of the spaceship that you get on. Now, and I say that because when people are abducted, say, let's assume they're abducted by the Palladians or whomever, then also they could be abducted by my labs. The government comes along and abducts them again to see what they discussed on the spaceship. Is that right?
That's true. That's absolutely true. And a lot of the abductions that go on, as far as I am aware, probably a third of them are done by the government anyway. They're not alien. They're not all alien abductions. They're government abductions. The government not only gave permission to extraterrestrial groups to abduct their citizens in exchange for technology, the government themselves abduct their citizens to use them as guinea pigs in laboratories and test things on them. And we have to remember, and we've talked about this previously. In fact, I think we mentioned it last time we spoke, Russell. Every single one of us in America, when we are born and we get a social security number, from that moment on, we are owned by the government. The government literally owns us, and they do have the right to do as they like with us. So abducting us and doing tests on us and experiments, that's really nothing to them. It's not, they're not going to feel guilty. We're not going to make them feel bad about it. And this, when we say the government, we're not talking about, Joe Blog from Jacksonville who got elected to Congress, because he probably knows less than you and I do.
Yeah, true,
we're
true,
talking
true.
About the real government that
the
runs
cabal.
The world, not just America. The cabal, yes.
Right.
They control everything, and they do, in their minds, they own all of us, and legally speaking, they actually do. They made sure of that because of this system of giving us social security numbers, and that whether you're here or in Europe or wherever you are, you register a birth, and that registration registers you as a chattel of the government. You belong to the government. So it's not surprising that they think they can do as they like with us. We are slave labor.
They've been doing it for thousands and thousands and thousands of years because, look, as we speak here today, and a lot of people won't believe this next statement, by the way, it's okay, but would you believe that 50,000, 100,000 or more people disappear from the face of the earth and are taken to Mars or Jupiter or the moon or wherever and used in factories and all that stuff? Would you believe that?
Okay. I believe that Dr. Michael Sala is a great researcher, was highly recommended as such to a friend who I absolutely trust and who has documented those facts in his books. So I believe that Dr. Michael Sala is telling the truth as far as he knows it. Do I know that to be true? No, I don't know it to be true. I do know that tens of thousands of people go missing and are never, ever found. That I know is true. And I also know it's true that in more recent years, it's not just being previously, street people that would never be missed, or orphans or people like that being taken. In recent history, it's been scientists, chemists, physicists, people of science, and all kinds of highly qualified technical people that have gone missing as well. Just disappeared, gone for a walk with a dog, never seen again. And according to Dr. Michael Sullivan's books, and his research, as I say, is impeccable, these people are being shipped off to Mars and various other places in the universe, actually being sold by our government into slave labor and being sold on by the reptilians. We have to understand about these reptilians. Just because they are pretty ugly looking things from our perspective does not make them stupid. They are among the most ancient and highly developed technologically and most intelligent beings in the universe, without question. They are billions of years old, right? They haven't come up as a new species in recent times or developed lately, you know, with a new star system. They've been in space as a spacefaring species for tens of millions of years. And I would not doubt at all that they have trading interests, because that is always their interest. They are traders. They buy and they sell. And I have no doubt that they trade across vast areas of the universe. They maybe are recent traders in this neck of the Milky Way, but as far as traders throughout the universe, they are very ancient and have been doing it for a long time. This is why they're so difficult to defeat. It's only in recent history, the last few million years, that they've taken a real interest in Earth and what Earth is producing. And the most valuable thing that Earth produces, because they don't care about, you know, gold or coal or copper or iron or plutonium. We've got nothing much like that that interests the rest of the universe. But what we have got that interests the rest of the universe greatly is a highly intelligent, intellectual hominid species called the human race. And as a species, we are valuable. We are the valuable asset that Earth produces.
Which, don't you think that's part of, can they be considered trafficking, if you will? I mean, I know that.
Yeah, that's absolutely, it's trafficking. Human trafficking.
All right, listen with this late. Go ahead.
I was going to say, they're probably doing a lot of trafficking with young women for sex. That wouldn't surprise me at all. The reptilians are great traffickers. They probably do a lot of drug dealing interplanetary drug dealing. And they probably just now, they're really getting into high-tech dealing, not in the technology itself, but in the scientists and researchers who are producing it. I wish they'd take all our pharmaceutical companies and get rid of allopathic medicine for us, because that would be a big help for the species, but that's not happened yet.
Yeah.
Well, but you were going to do a clip?
Yeah. Here's a clip.
The planet Earth is not only hollow, but the poles are actually thinned, and there are actually entrances into the inner core at the north and south poles of the Earth. He imagined that there were advanced civilizations living inside the planet.
Ideas of an occupied hollow Earth would be revisited nearly two centuries later, in 1947, when famous polar explorer Admiral Richard Byrd flew reconnaissance missions over the North Pole. Byrd allegedly reported in his private journal about a mysterious land beyond the North Pole, which he called the center of the great unknown.
Admiral Richard Byrd was able to fly to the North Pole and back, and recorded flying over lush green areas where none should have been. And then 3 years later, he flew over the South Pole.
It's rumored that when Admiral Byrd's task force actually got to Antarctica, that one of the first things they discovered was an entrance into a hollow Earth civilization that was populated by very, very advanced beings.
Admiral Byrd made a lot of unusual statements, including talking about what he called a new kind of craft that could fly from pole to pole. And when Byrd got back to the United States, he was brought back to Washington, where he was questioned very heavily about his statements. And allegedly, he was told to stop talking about this.
Is it possible that entrances to another world can be found at the Earth's poles? And if so, did Admiral Byrd actually pass through one of them?
Okay, that's Admiral Byrd when he took that armada in 1947. That's part of the history, too, by the way. He took, I think, three or four. Go ahead, let's talk about that a bit so people can understand
He took several. After the UFO sighting over Washington, I believe that was one of the reasons they put together this. They discovered these ships were spaceships were coming out of Antarctica. And so the Americans put a fleet of ships together with, I called him Captain, but I'm sorry, Admiral Byrd. He was an admiral. They put Admiral Byrd in charge to go down there and basically wreak havoc on these people who were building these ships. And when they got there, these little ships came zooming up out of the water and terrified them all to death and did quite a bit of damage. There is an interesting thing about that. The whole story is another of the government secrets, because in the reports, and I don't remember the names, I think my memory is failing me, but in the reports, there was a ship sunk, an American ship sunk, and they said it was a certain ship. It was cruiser so-and-so. And it turned out that that particular ship was not one of the original troop. One of the original group of ships, and that it had actually been sunk and damaged, and then the remains of it dragged into some port back east many years before. And so there was a whole big cover-up on that story, and they got the names of the ships wrong, and there were a lot of things wrong in the official report, and a few clever reporters caught it and realized, okay, this is another cover-up story. But essentially, these vehicles came out of the ocean at phenomenal speeds, terrified everybody to death, and we ran home. Admiral Byrd brought his ships, and they were damaged. There was a lot of damage, but he brought his ships home. And nobody really knows what the true story was, because, as I say, they did a big cover-up. I believe when he flew over the North Pole, I remember it being in the newspapers, and I was obviously in England at that time. I'd not come to America. And I remember it being a big newspaper story about Byrd flying over the North Pole, and the story that he told, that he lost control of his aircraft, but he didn't crash. He suddenly had no instruments, no control, no nothing working in his plane, but some force took over control of his plane and brought it in, took it into the earth through the pole entrance, into the inner earth. And that he spent several hours there in the company of these inner earth people, and they took him round, showed him, talked to him, gave him all his information, and then he got back in his plane, and they put him back outside, and he flew home. And yep. I absolutely believe that man. There's no reason not to believe his story, because he was who he was. You know, somebody at his level of responsibility doesn't go around making up stories like that, because it could only be damaging to his career. That could not have been good news. And he had to know that the government wouldn't like it, and they didn't. They told him to shut up. You know, they shut him down, and he was not allowed to speak of it. So yes, I do believe that that story was true. And as I said earlier, I have no personal experience. So far as I know, I've never been to the inner earth or met any of knowing Dr. Byrd, Admiral Byrd's history and his story. I would believe his story. Yes. I think, okay. And I think it's an interesting idea that there are these people guarding knowledge. I would, yeah.
Oh, that.
Richard Byrd was able to fly to the North Pole and back and recorded flying over lush green areas where none should have been. And then 3 years later, he flew over the South Pole.
It's rumored that when Admiral Byrd's task force actually got to Antarctica, that one of the first things they discovered was an entrance into a hollow earth civilization that was populated by very, very advanced beings.
Admiral Byrd made a lot of unusual statements, including talking about what he called a new kind of craft that could fly from pole to pole. And when Byrd got back to the United States, he was brought back to Washington, where he was questioned very heavily about his statements. And allegedly, he was told to stop talking about this.
And he stopped talking. Now, let me go to another piece that you had talked about briefly. When the government, or you said those little ships that fly all around here, but they talk about the TikTok and all that, they're really a government craft, is that right? Most of them.
What I think I said was that they come from planet Earth.
Right.
They're not spaceships.
Okay.
So they come, you know, from all the underground bases, from Antarctica, from Peru, from all over the world there are these bases. And they're not those small craft that you see. The vast majority of them are not spaceships. They can't go into space. They don't have that capability. There are some craft that look like that, that normally have a three-man crew that are used as landing craft off the big ships that are in space. So they're like, you know, a big, what do they call them? Motherships, they call them usually. I mostly call them city ships. They're really big ships. They have fleets of these small craft that they put down into the atmosphere.
Now, the mothership could be 3, 4, 5 football fields long, right? The mothership, or bigger, right? The mothership.
Oh, yeah. A city ship's around 22 miles long.
Okay, okay. So that can't land here. I mean, it would destroy the planet if it were to land, right?
They couldn't land. They'd disintegrate. They're built in space, and they live in space. They do not go into planetary atmospheres or planetary gravitational fields. They stay outside the gravitational field of any planet.
All right. So, David, your contactee, he's on one of those ships as we speak. Is that what we're talking
about? Yeah, the one that he is on is one of the Anuna ships that orbit our planet. And that ship is probably, I'm just trying to put it back into my mind how big that ship is. It's probably not much more than a mile long. About a mile.
That's pretty big.
It's a good size. It's a good size. It's an interstellar ship. It can go from, you know, star system to star system. It's a big ship.
And that's something.
But it's not a transporter ship. It's not designed for transporting people. The really big ships are designed for transporting people. The one that I'm talking about, that's 22 miles long, right? That ship can transport up to 8 million people, right?
Wow.
But this,
wow.
The one that David's on is the crew, and it takes a few passengers, you know, maybe guests or something. I think the crew, if I remember rightly, is something like 650 or 700 is the crew of the ship.
Oh, okay. Great. Well, William Mills Tompkins, who just crossed over at 94 years old, he has a book here called Selected by the Extraterrestrials. And this is what he says about what's going on after he was contacted when he was like in 1940, 41 or so, but he just left a year or so ago. But this is
when
what he says about...
When he was 19.
When he was 19. And listen to this.
People all over this planet for at least 6,000 years have been influenced by extraterrestrials, the Dracos and the Reptilians. They have taken the information that is in essentially every school on the planet, and they've modified the information. All history documentation in this country and on every country on the planet have been given lies about astronomy, lies about mathematics, lies about technical capabilities, lies about the universe, you name it, okay? Everything have been lies. Every PhD on this planet, whether they're scientific, whether they're medical, makes no difference. Every book that they read the 6 years they were in the university are lies. They're not telling the truth. They were not taught the truth. At that time, we had 34 admirals in the Navy. All of them had been through Annapolis. They learned how to learn everything about the Navy, everything about history, everything about mathematics, everything about astronomy, you name it. They learned all lies. So who did the Secretary of Navy Forrestal select for this job? Turns out Admiral Riccobata was not an American. He was born in Australia. The Secretary of the Navy selected an Australian man who had not been infected with the lies that the reptilians had taught us. He was freer of that. So the Secretary of the Navy was aware of this because he had been contacted by Nordic extraterrestrials, people here trying to help the United States. Okay? Very important point. So when I was selected, I hadn't been to the universities. I hadn't gotten the bad information. I hadn't been given the wrong information, and this is the reason I was selected, because I was knowledgeable of the Navy, I was knowledgeable what the threats were, but I hadn't gone to the university and picked up all the lies.
So when we say a vehicle can travel from 86,000 miles a second, and you're saying that it can travel faster than that, and he's saying too, he said it can do 10 times faster than that because go ahead, tell how can it do that?
It go beyond the speed of light,
right?
And that's how we measure the speed of light here. Time, speed, and distance are all exactly the same thing. Whether you discuss things in terms of distance or time or speed, you're talking about the same thing. So you measure, for instance, they science will tell you that there's no such thing as a constant of time, but there is a constant of time, the average rate at which time moves throughout the universe. And there's a constant of the sun, or the speed of light, the average rate at which light moves through, particles of light move through the universe. And these are things that our science simply doesn't understand. You know, I mean, it sounds so arrogant when somebody like me, who never had any education to speak of, makes these statements. But I have a different kind of education, and I haven't been brainwashed with all the wrong things because I didn't go to university. I didn't get a college degree. As I say, the only academic thing I ever did was learn to become a registered nurse. So I am fairly ignorant in terms of knowledge among many of my friends. They are far better educated than I am. But I do know these things about the universe. For instance, to move beyond the speed of light, you actually use a beam. It's like a laser beam that goes out in front of the ship, and you create a wormhole. That's what you do. And the way you create it is by hitting the particles of light one by one, because the universe is itself like a spiral galaxy. It has a center, and the entire universe is spinning around it. And that center of our universe is the equivalent of a North Pole. It's the North Polarity. And the outer rim anywhere on our universe, throughout all the way around the whole cool of our universe, you might say, that outer rim, that perimeter of our universe, is the equivalent of a South Pole. So light travels in a north-south direction. And it comes from the north and it travels out to the south. In other words, it goes in all directions from the center to the perimeter of the universe at all times, constantly, and at a constant rate. That rate of travel is only varied by the gravitational fields of the bodies that are within the universe. But through space, through those big emptinesses between systems, you might say, it's traveling at a fairly constant speed. And each particle of light is shaped like a diamond. I call them photons. My problem is I don't have the education with the technical language, so it's sometimes hard for me to describe what I know. But each particle of light looks like a diamond, like two pyramids stacked one on top of the other, except they've only got three sides, not two. And that's the shape of a particle of light. And one end of it is a north polarity, and the other end of it is a south polarity, and it's traveling from north to south all the time. So when you plot it in space, you take that into account. It's like longitude and latitude lines, except it's the whole of the universe that you're looking at. And where the light is flowing, you project a beam that I can only describe it like a laser beam. That it has a bluish color to it, and it comes out from the front of the ship, and it touches the edge of an imaginary circle. And that circle is as wide as you want your wormhole to be. So the beam is the length of the diameter of that circle. And then all the particles of light passing over that circle are contacted constantly, dot, 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 billions of times, and each time it's contacted, the beam reverses the polarity from south back to north. It's coming from the north, the particle of light. Where the beam touches it, it reverses the polarity, and essentially it folds that light up, and that's you moving through the universe. It's a hard concept to understand, but it's a simple process. Once you understand it, you create an artificial wormhole. Why do you think when they show you pictures in movies and where they do special effects, or even in science pictures, they show you inside a black hole, and inside the black hole or a wormhole, a hole in space, right, that it's like all these light rushing by, rushing by, rushing by. You remember 2001, the stars, he said, oh, it's full of stars and the light all rushing by him. Well, that's exactly what it is doing. The light is rushing by because you are folding it up. And so virtually, you're only moving as far as billions of compressed light particles, which you might, as I say, have gone, I don't know exactly what the equation is, but you might have gone 2 light years away, and you've only actually traveled 3 or 4 feet because
wow.
You're compressing the light. You're compressing the light. And
I
the
see.
Light, remember the fundamental truth of the universe is that the light is what everything is made of. There is nothing that exists anywhere on any manifestation of the universe, including us, that is not made of light. Everything's made of light.
I see.
The chemicals that we manufacture things out of are originally light particles. Everything. So when you understand that concept, then it's not hard to see, okay, so if you can squish a lot of this light into a small space, it puts you at the other side of that piece of light, which may be 2 light years away.
So speaking of light and frequency, energy, with Royal Rife or Tesla and those guys, they were able to take those entities and create a different world, including help to heal us without big pharma's medicines that we put in our bodies, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. A human being is a self-healing machine.
Wow. Isn't that something?
The problem is that we've got so much artificial stuff in us at the moment. You know, we've so many synthetics and things that are environmentally bad things in our system that it's no longer possible to live in a 100% natural way, because we no longer have a 100% natural world to live in. Our world is highly artificialized, if there were such a word, in all the environmental damage that we've done to the planet. We no longer have a Garden of Eden. We have mostly a pretty barren place to live. But
do you think that eventually that's going to be cleaned up? You think that we're going?
Yes. This planet. There are multiple expressions of everything. Kind of, you know. Just for a moment, imagine this. Imagine that you're at the fairground and you're looking at one of those places where they have a mirror. And you look into it, and there's a reflection, and behind that another reflection, and another, and the reflections go on and on and on into infinity, right? Well, you have something of that when it comes to our universe. You have parallel universes, or multiple dimensions of the universe that you exist in, and they can be the same, but very different. Right now, we are experiencing Earth, poor old Earth, in one of its, I want to say, dying phases before renewal. We are due to come up for renewal when it will be returned to a more pristine state. Is that what Earth humans will experience of it? Well, those who evolve with the planet will experience that. Those who will not evolve with the planet, not choose or do the work to evolve with the planet, they will stay with the old dying planet, and conditions will continue to deteriorate. So it's like a constant splitting off of what our experiential reality is. It changes as we change, as we are capable of comprehending something, in the same way that our knowledge changes. You know, as children, we had very little actual knowledge, whereas adults, we might have a much greater quantity of knowledge in our brains. And in the same way, the Earth itself has multiple layers to it. There's a multiplicity of reflections, let's say, of the Earth, because the Earth is the creation in which we are experiencing particular kind of reality, and that's a three-dimensional reality experienced basically through our 5 senses, plus our extrasensory perception, if we have it, right, if we've developed it. But imagine this. Imagine what the world would be like if we were experiencing it not through sound or smell or touch or hearing or sight even, but what would it would be like if we were experiencing it at a high spiritual level of extrasensory perception, so that when we saw with the third eye, and we saw then the living, vibrating life of, in all the plants and trees and people and animals. It would be a different experience of Earth. So that's what is happening now. This Earth is in a dying phase, and the new Earth is coming into being. And those who come into being with the new Earth, who advance into the new Earth, will experience their reality differently from the way we experience the reality now.
Okay.
And in that context, it's an illusion.
All right.
Because we are an illusion in that context.
All right. The other day you were talking about how you see the future in a general sense of the word. And we are talking about from saving Jesus to the Emerald Tablets, to the concentration on Jesus said in John 14:12, all the things that I have done, you can do. And
it will be known as the Age of Tan. That's the future. And it will be under Chinese dominance, and it will be a form of global communism. And it will actually be a very good world, because it will be based on the concept of that are based in our, actually, in our constitution, equality, fair play, evenness, even-handedness, justice, you know, the things that are in our constitution. But we have never managed to actually live it. In America, we have the world's greatest document for the governance of man, and yet we don't live it. In communist China, they've gone through one of the worst periods probably in human history, like Russian communism, you know, where families and cultures were torn apart and just terrible, terrible situation. But if you can combine the two concepts of communal sharing, which is communism, communal sharing, under the auspices of a document like our Constitution, you will have as near utopia as you're going to get on this planet. And that is what is expected to come into play under the overshadowing of Marduk.
Okay. Well, we are to close. What would you say in the next minute that we have left? What would you say?
Well, I would say that yes, there are a lot of good things for humanity in the future. And I just hope that most of us are not here to see it, because I hope we have chosen to advance into even greater things that are out there in the universe. I, for one, know that I belong the cleanup crew, and it is going to take us, according to the best calculations on the big UFOs, it's going to take us 300 or 400 years to environmentally clean this planet up and bring it up to snuff, so to speak, so that all of us who are still living on this beautiful planet can actually have a good life with all the necessities available to us in exchange for an honest day's work. And I certainly am happy to be staying around to help towards that in the future.
Well, I thank you once again for sharing this time with us and helping us to understand the world just a wee bit better, just a wee bit better. So thank you very much. Thank you again. We really appreciate you.
My pleasure. My pleasure. God bless everybody.
God bless you. You have a good one. Thank you very much.